Welcome to the Trolling BA Show. I'm your host, Felicia Ann Rose, A Newha, aka the trillest NBA you will ever know. And I'm here to help you survive and thrive in corporate America by giving you the truth and being as real as only I can be. Happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome back to the show. So glad y'all made it back one more again. You know what this is. We are working through How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And today we are wrapping up part three, How to Win People to Your Way of Thinking. We got three of the final principles, principles 10, 11, and 12 that we are going to wrap up with on this part. I'm really excited to do this because this book, oh man, y'all, it's like the truth, but you gotta sift through to get the good nuggets out. And so I'm hoping that I'm helping you sift through to get the actionable things and takeaways that you need to implement when you are in the workplace. But before we get into it, first we have so today's corporate warrior that I want to spotlight is Peggy Alford. She is the EVP Global Sales at PayPal. In her role, Peggy oversees the global sales and distribution of PayPal's products and services and leads the customer success and go-to-market teams that help drive PayPal's position as a leading digital payment method for consumers and businesses around the globe. Peggy has thrived throughout her career by building and leading experienced and diverse teams, fostering a culture of collaboration that allows teams to develop scalable and effective solutions. In her tenure with PayPal, she has held numerous senior leadership roles. In March of 2019, Peggy returned to PayPal after nearly 2 years as Chief Financial Officer and Head of Operations at the Shan Zuckerberg Initiative, a philanthropic organization. Prior to joining PayPal in 2011, Peggy worked at Rent.com, a national internet real estate listing service and former subsidiary of eBay Incorporated, where she served in positions of increasing responsibility, including president, general manager, and chief financial officer. She has also served on Facebook's board of directors since 2019 and on the board of Macerich, a real estate investment trust, since 2018. Peggy holds a Bachelor of Science in Accounting and Business Administration from the University of Dayton. She is also a certified public accountant. Listen, I don't know Peggy personally, but I can see she's already a badass. You hear me? She is definitely one to watch, and don't know if she wants that CEO spot, but she is definitely poised for it. So you go, Peggy. If anyone knows Peggy out there, tell her we shouted her out on Corporate Warrior Spotlight. Now, get into the show. All right, for our first segment, we're going to be hitting up Principle 10 in Part 3 of How to Win Friends and Influence People. So the title of this chapter for this principle is An Appeal That Everybody Likes. I'm like, I come naming these chapters like this. But basically, the principle says, appeal to the nobler motives. And I actually had to like look this one up. I'm like, nobler motives. Because, you know, we work with sharks, right? Like, some of these people, and I always wonder, and I don't know, if y'all wonder this, y'all hit me up and let me know if I'm crazy and it's just me, or if y'all wonder this too. But there are some people you've worked with and they are absolutely horrible. Like, they are just horrid, right? Their behavior, their actions, how they dehumanize other people that we all work with. And you're just like, this person is married and has kids. Who would love you? Why do they love you? I'll never forget, I was working for this woman and she happened to be a woman of color, but she wasn't Black. Okay. And I was just like, how are you married with a child? I feel sorry for your husband and your kid because you are absolute trash as a human being. The way you show up at work, the way you talk to others, the way you treat people, like you have a horrible reputation here in the workplace. And I just can't imagine that you're that much different at home. But you'd be surprised. And so when I think through nobler motives, some people are not noble at all. But as I read in this chapter, I realized even the worst of us are still human beings. And a lot of times that behavior that we see is something deep-seated, deep-rooted trauma, something. It has nothing to do with us. We just happen to have to experience it by being around these people. And so when I think about this tenet, the first thing for this is you have to ask yourself, what does assuming positive intent look like? Which I know can be very, very, very difficult when you're dealing with a bitch. You're like, I hate this person. And it's not that you hate the person, you hate their behavior. You don't know that person. That's just the demon on the outside that shows up at work. We don't really know who that person is, right? And so you have to take a step back and you have to be like, okay, even though this person isn't recognizing my humanity, I will understand and recognize theirs for the purposes of getting through whatever the situation is. And I also cast out this demon that's inside this human right now. Like you have to go there. And then you have to say, okay, what if maybe, you know, suspend reality for a minute. What if maybe there's something I'm missing? What if maybe there was actually some good intention here and I can't see it because their impact is complete trash? So what if maybe spin reality and ask those questions? Here in the book, Dale Carnegie writes, and again, he be writing about these white people. I'm like, who are these people? J. Pierpont Morgan observed in one of his analytical interludes that a person usually has two reasons for doing a thing. One that sounds good and a real one. The person himself will think of the real reason. You don't need to emphasize that. But all of us, being idealists at heart, like to think of motives that sound good. So in order to change people, appeal to their nobler motives. All right, what exactly does that mean? Well, when you keep reading, basically, let's say, or the example, I'll talk through the example he gives. He talks about this man who has tenants. And one of the tenants, and this was in Pennsylvania. And so one of the tenants was disgruntled and threatened to move out and said, F this lease, I'm moving out for whatever reason. And the landlord that owned the property, he like really didn't want the tenant to move out. It was wintertime. And if anybody who owns some property and they're renting it out, you just do not want to rent in the wintertime. That's not the time. That's not where demand for rentals are highest in the summer, because that's when everybody's moving around, changing. It's easier to move in the summer. The weather's better. All the things, right? Logically makes sense. School's out, blah, blah, blah. So it's dead of winter. And this guy's like, I'm moving out. And so, mind you, the guy signed a lease. So in the landlord went to the guy in a nutshell and was like, hey, look, I know you're upset, but you did sign this lease. I know that you are a person of your word. And I know that you're a good person, which is why I leased to you. So I know you're upset. I want you to please reconsider. Take the rest of this month, because it was toward the end of the month. Take the rest of the month, reconsider moving out, because, you know, I know you're a person of your word and I know your character, and you breaking a lease like this would be against like the character that you have, basically. But if you come to me at the end of the month, and you say, no, I thought about it and I'm out, I will honor that. I will respect that. And so when the end of the month came, the guy came and paid his rent. And he was like, yeah, I do keep to my commitments. So here's my rent. And so that's what it means to appeal to the nobler motives, right? Like, remind people of why they agreed to do something when they agreed to do it, right? Because yes, along the way, people do change their minds for whatever reasons. But if you are a person of your word, then you won't go back on your word. And you just have to remind people of who they said they were in the situation. Okay, so how does that translate at work? Well, let's say you're like me and you work with cross-functional teammates. And so you don't have a reporting relationship with them. Like, they don't report to you, you don't report to them, but you depend on each other to get things done and you have to collaborate and work together. And so when you start a project, everybody should be made to agree, like, hey, this is what you guys are going to do. This is how you're going to do it. This is when this is due. These are the due dates. These are the deadlines. Are we all in agreement? Does anybody have, you know, get everything flushed out in those early meetings? And so then when it gets down the line and somebody tries to change something or somebody's, you know, trying to be delayed and, you know, they making excuses, you say, hey, and when we started this project, you told us that you would be able to do X, Y, Z. What changed? What happened along the way? Let's talk about the breakdown in communication. Is there anything I can help you to keep us on track? Is there a barrier that I can break down? You know, let me help you help this project. Again, that's appealing to the nobler. I'm like, oh, okay, you're right. I did say that. Yeah, okay, this is what changed. Okay, I can help you problem solve, Felicia. And that's always how I've worked with cross-functional partners. And I have had the most wonderful cross-functional partners. I have always had just the best people with peer-to-peer working relationships. I mean, the best. Now, them leaders, we'll talk about that later. But what you need to understand is when you need someone to do something, you ask them to do it for the reason that resonates with them, for the reason that they said they would do it. It's about their character. That's appealing to their nobler motive. But in order to do that, you have to assume positive intent and that they mean well. They just, for whatever reason, are at this crossroads in this junction or situation. So again, this means that you have to take a pause and think through the whys. And we talked about that in the last episode, like thinking through other people's actions and what they're doing. I'm telling you, that's game changer. Okay? Changes the game for us. When we get back from the break, you know, it's funny. All my life, I've been told that, you know, at times I can be dramatic. And who knew that being dramatic could actually help me in corporate America? I'll explain what Dale Carnegie says when we get back from the break. Hey guys, I have to tell you, I just finished watching Attorney Anitra's masterclass. And when I tell you, I'm mad that I didn't know this stuff years ago. Like, game changer. Like, we're talking about how to document. We're talking about how the process of thinking through how to fight for your rights in the workplace. When I tell you, she breaks this down so well and gives you the framework and then tells you what you need to do to protect yourself and get your coins. When I tell you, for me, this is a game changer. And I am definitely going to be incorporating these principles and practices into how I coach people, especially people who are in a sticky situation. I mean, we're talking pips, we're talking can't get promoted. And this new term, quiet firing, oh my God, how many of y'all know people who are being actively pushed out of their organizations, but on the low low? So like, they're taking projects away from you. They're, you know, murmurs about you. Like, people stop talking to you. They stop responding to your emails. When I tell you Attorney Anitra has the plan and the blueprint, this is it. So if you have not signed up for this masterclass, what are you waiting for? Like, get in there, get this knowledge, and then get your best possible outcome at work, which means get your money, okay? And don't let work work you. You work work. So boss up, get this information. The link to the masterclass is in the bio. It is worth every investment and time. And it's not long. It's short information, but it's to the point. And I'm telling you, do not wait. Go sign up for this masterclass. Take this masterclass right now. The link is in the show notes. Now, let's get back to the show. All right, guys, and we are back from the break. Moseying on to principle 11, which is dramatize your ideas. And it's so funny because the title of this chapter is The Movies Do It, TV Does It, Why Don't You Do It? And at first I was reading this, I was like, huh? And it was so interesting, but it was so true. And when I read this, I was like, oh, this is when I say I can show you better than I can tell you. That's really what this means, because the example he uses at the very beginning is about this newspaper, and people had started talking about, well, the newspaper is putting more ads in the paper than they are, you know, actually, you know, giving news and telling stories, right? And so, again, y'all, this is like, what, 1930, 1940, right? So newspaper was everything back then. And so advertisers were being told that this newspaper wasn't good to advertise in because people were, you know, shying away from it because all it was full of ads and no news. And so this newspaper was like, oh, well, we can show you better than we can tell you. So they literally clipped from their regular edition all of the articles, the news articles, the information from one day, from on an average day of their paper. And they made a book called One Day. And it was 307 pages, hardcover book. And they printed it out. And they sold it for just a few cents to show people that in one day, these are all the stories we tell. 307 pages. So no ads. These are stories. This is from one day of our paper. And it was like, we can show you better than we can tell you. Cause like, dang, how thick is that paper? I mean, it was from Philadelphia. But the point is, like, when you come up against a rumor or something, or you come up against any talk track, showing is better than just merely saying, nuh-uh, right? Like, that's not true. But even with any information you're trying to convey, and it goes on to say in How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie says, it conveyed the facts more vividly, more interestingly, more impressively than pages of figures and mere talk could have done. So you want to tell a story. Storytelling is the key to capturing attention. Dale Carnegie writes, this is the day of dramatization. Merely stating a truth isn't enough. The truth has to be made vivid, interesting, dramatic. You have to use showmanship. The movies do it. Television does it. And you will have to do it if you want attention. Let's break this down. Dramatization is not the same as, you know, going in there, like not being loud voice. That's not dramatization. Storytelling. So like if Dale Carnegie was alive and he had to rewrite this book with today's language, what he's talking about here is storytelling. You have to tell the story, right? We all know this. We all have learned this. But what exactly does that mean? What that means is you don't simply stop with just giving the base information. When you're presenting, you know, information to a group at work, or when you're, you know, pleading your case, you need to come with examples, illustrations. You need to give context. This is how you create understanding, and this is how you capture people's attention, and this is how you influence them. So I know it's a big buzzword to talk about storytelling, but don't get caught up in that. Really and truly, what you need to think through is, what information can I share with this person that will land on them in a way that's impactful? That's what you need to think through. And then relay that information in that way. That's storytelling, right? It's that simple. So don't allow, you know, all the buzziness and all the things to make you think, oh, well, I'm not good at storytelling. And if you get the feedback that, well, you need to work on your storytelling, pressure test, ask, well, what do you mean by that? Because saying somebody needs to work on their storytelling, or, you know, you could be better at storytelling, what does that mean for you? Because storytelling is a very subjective thing. In fact, I would argue right now, I am telling you stories on this podcast. And some people be like, well, I don't know if it's necessary stories, Felicia. I mean, you're relaying information, but I mean, it's not like you're telling, you know, a bunch of stories. It's subjective. I think I am. I think I'm good at it. I mean, you listening right now, right? So the point is, people will try to give you feedback that you're not good at something, or you're not doing something that you're absolutely doing. So you always need to pressure test and make sure you get clarity and understand. What does that mean? And what do you suggest I do to make it better? Right? So you understand what their perspective is. And then you can go forth and tell stories that land on them better. But remember that you were just fine and enough just how you are. Okay. Just going to throw that little nugget of Felicia in there on this section. Had nothing to do with dramatize your ideas, really. But here we are. When we get back from the break, we're going to wrap up with the most important thing. And who would have thought Dale Carnegie is going to tell us to challenge people? What? I don't know, Dale. We're going to have to talk about this when we get back. Hey, my Patreon listeners. Oh my God. I have been on break. I owe you guys tremendously. First, I just want to say thank you for being a patron of the Trill NBA show. Without your contributions, Chris might not get paid. No, we're going to pay. We're going to make sure Chris gets paid. But I just want to tell you guys, I really appreciate y'all. And if you love this show and if you've gotten value out of the show, you've gotten a promotion from this show, you've got off a pip because of the show. So if I saved your job, I help you get a new job, I help you get a raise. Please, please, please become a patron of the Trill NBA show. I'm constantly trying to figure out with my team what we are doing for our Patreons. Bear with me and trust me, the day one Patreons, I got special stuff for y'all coming out in the new year. I promise, I promise, I promise. You know, y'all just keep riding with me, rocking with me. I got y'all. I appreciate the support. I appreciate everybody for listening to the show. I'm glad that it is a blessing to you as much as you guys have been a blessing to me. Okay. So With that said, go to the link in the show notes. If you are not a patron, become a patron. And let's get back to the show. And we are back, guys. Thanks for rocking with me today. I appreciate y'all. I'm gonna wrap up real quick here on this last tenet of part 3 of How to Win Friends and Influence People. This part is called How to Win People to Your Way of Thinking. So this is the third part in the book. We are on the last chapter and the last principle, which is throw down a challenge. I looked at that. I was like, Dale, you telling us to fight at work? I don't know if you want to tell us to fight at work. That's not quite what he meant, y'all. He didn't say fight at work. But the title of this chapter says, when nothing else works, try this. And it's amazing because he starts out this chapter telling a story about Charles Schwab, of course. I'm like, wait, you mean that bank? Yeah, you know, that white man. So he says, Charles Schwab had a mill manager whose people weren't producing their quota of work. So Schwab goes down there. So, you know, he's a big, big boss, right? So he's going down with regular people, basically. And he's like, well, what's happening? Why aren't they? The manager's like, I've cussed them. I've fussed at them. I've threatened them to damnation of being fired, but nothing works. They just aren't producing. I don't know what to do. So the conversation took place at the end of the day. And so just before the night shift came on, Schwab asked the manager for a piece of chalk. And then turning to the nearest man asked, how many heats did your shift make today? And the guy said 6. And so without saying another word, Charles Schwab took that piece of chalk and he wrote a big 6 on the floor and he walked away. And so then when the night shift came on, they saw this 6 and they were asking, you know, what does this mean? And so the day people said, well, the big boss was in here today and he asked us how many heats we made and we told him 6 and he wrote it down on the floor in his chalk. And so the next morning, Schwab walked through the mill again and the night shift had rubbed out 6 and replaced it with a big old 7. So when the day shift came back and they reported to work the next morning, they saw that big 7 on the board. Ah, challenge. So basically, Charles Schwab got them into a healthy competition. And so Dale Carnegie writes, let Charles Schwab say it in his own words. The way to get things done, says Schwab, is to stimulate competition. I do not mean in a sordid money-getting way, but in the desire to excel. The desire to excel, the challenge, throwing down the gauntlet, an infallible way of appealing to people of spirit, is what Dale Carnegie finishes writing there. And I realized, I was like, okay, I see that. And so this is really for my leaders, my people managers. You know, when you think through, like, how do I motivate people? And I think one thing we have experienced, and I think we've probably all experienced, if you think back, you've experienced this. You've had this manager who I think this is what they were trying to do. But instead, what they did is compared you to another coworker.
Well, I mean, have you seen how Susie does this? Like, she's just really good at that. And like, you should, you know, maybe talk to her and, you know, learn from her because she's the best.
And blah, 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 right? Well, that doesn't feel good to be compared like that. I'm not Susie. I don't do what Susie does, right? I do what I do. And the most important thing that we all need to understand, and this is the
most important thing.
People want to feel important. And the only reason you can stir that desire of excellence is that you create an environment where the people know they're important, right? Like when you acknowledge like, oh, how many you did 6? Okay, I acknowledge your 6. Didn't say the 6 was bad. Didn't say, oh, well, the other shift is doing better or this other meal is doing better than y'all. No, didn't do that. It was just like, okay, y'all did 6. Night shift, they did six, right? And it's just appealing to that sense of, oh, we gonna do seven, right? Like, that is a natural human reaction, especially among people with penises. They definitely are, you know, have that little competitiveness in them. And it's just stems from that, hey, I want to do the best I can do. And so it's like, well, that person can do that. I know I can, you know, shoot for my best, and I can see somebody else is able to do that. I could be able to do that too. I'm going to try, right? It has nothing to do with how good you are, how good you aren't, or anything like that. And so to my managers, a word to my managers, you want to make people feel important. And you want to acknowledge that first. And when you do that, people will then want to give you their best. They'll want to have that spirit of excel. But you have to understand that person. And you can't go around comparing them in a derogatory way, comparing them to other people. You shouldn't compare them to other people, period. And I'll leave you guys with the end of this chapter here. Dale Carnegie writes, "This is what every successful person loves, the game. The chance for self-expression. The chance to prove his or her worth, to excel, to win. That is what makes foot races and hog calling and pie eating contests. The desire to excel. The desire for a feeling of importance." I leave you with this. You are important. You have the power to shine importance on other people. When you are in environments where people are trying to detract from the fact that you yourself are important, you need to recognize that that is about them and not about you. You also need to recognize your own self-importance and your own worth and stay in that so that you continue to give that feeling to other people that you work with. And when you do that, when you recognize your own importance and then you recognize the people around you, their importance, then what you will find is you will start to generate from within around you a culture of people who want to excel. And that is the core to doing dope shit in your career and at work. It all starts with you and how you show up. And it also starts with you and how you react to the other people around you. If you allow them to dictate how you react. So you have a manager who doesn't make you feel important. You hold on to feeling important for yourself. And then the people you work with, you give that to them as well. And your manager will shift. They will have to. Or they will fire you because you rub them the wrong way. Or, you know, they'll misstep. And if they try to fire you, that's when you need to call Attorney Anitra, real talk. Because we about this life. So understand your power. Understand how you should feel important. You are important. And don't let anybody tell you any different. Okay? So that is part 3 of How to Win Friends and Influence People. And the next episode of the series, we'll wrap up with part 4, which is about leadership. And I'm excited to wrap that up. So that's coming. But we are going to have an episode in between because there's some things I want to talk to y'all about. So the next episode will be a conversation between me and you. And we're going to talk about some things that I need you to think about as you're managing your career, especially after reading this 3rd part of How to Win Friends and Influence People. But that's next week, guys. So until then, if you need some help or advice about a specific situation, I'm not taking coaching calls right now, But you can email me at ask@trillinba.com. I'm happy to either answer your question or connect you to the right person if I don't have the answer. Again, that's ask@trillinba.com to submit your question or concern. If you send me a listener letter and put in the title of the email or put in the subject of the email, listener letter, I will make sure we connect and hope to read your listener letter on the show. And you will get a free consultation from me about your situation. So listener letters take priority because I want to start incorporating some of the lessons from what you're going through into the show, because that's how we learn. We learn from each other. So until next week, guys, keep it trill. The Trill MBA Show is a Fair World Corp. LLC production. Executive produced by Felicia and Rose Inuha. Sound design and editing by Chris Mann with Podshaper. Theme music is Kick Push by Ryan Little. Keep it trill every day, y'all.